everybody, welcome to Desde la Cima, a podcast created to invite and inspire all the Latinos and Latinas from the whole world that are doing amazing things. And today I'm humbled and honored to have a friend from a long time. I don't remember even when we met the first time, somewhere here in Colorado.
And she's Lily Griego. Such destiny brought us together.
The destiny, woo! And I love, because I don't believe in destiny. Well, maybe I believe in destiny and there is a reason for things to happen. So today with us is Lily Griego. Can you believe it? I mean, like, my heart wants to get out of my chest. So Lily, one more time, thank you for being with us today with Desde la Cima. We are going to do it in English and in Spanish because why not? We are Latinas. We are beautiful, we are smart, we are creative, and we are bilingual. So we are going to do it in both.
How about that? Sí, claro.
There you go, beautiful. So Lily, let's start again. Tell us who you are. And you were saying beautiful things before we started, so please go ahead.
Thank you again for having me. I appreciate the time with you. I appreciate the time with your listeners. I really appreciate just being in conversation. So thank you. And we had just kind of touched a little bit on identity mm-hmm. and the layers of identity, Latinidad, all of the complexity around being Latina, and how do we identify overall? How do we identify in different spaces, mm-hmm. different audiences, and different chapters of our life? And so one of the things I was saying is that if I take my hat off that I'm normally speaking for work mm-hmm. and identifying professionally, most of my life has been identifying as a mom. And mm-hmm. so I have a son and he's 30. You know, being with him and being a single mom for a significant portion of my life, it was centered in how do I make this human a good person and give him all the footing, the foundation mm-hmm. That he needs to be successful in life. You know, hopefully if I left this earth sooner than anticipated, that he would be ready for what life throws at him, good, bad, and different. Mm-hmm. And so I was saying that during the recession, I was at one point working four jobs.
Four jobs, can you imagine? Like,
that's a common story.
I know. Especially for Latinos in that.
Sí, claro. It's not okay. Mm-hmm. So in that process, who am I? I became different things. I started showing up to Democratic Party functions and seeking community in the party as someone who started advocating for equal pay. Mm-hmm. It was through that I learned a myriad of things about Latinas and how, yes, there was an equal pay issue for women, so gender issues, mm-hmm. but then white women and Latina women, our sisters who are black, our sisters who are Asian American, Pacific Islander, our sisters who are indigenous, mm-hmm. our sisters in the LGBTQ community, and the gap on pay was infuriating but also heartbreaking, mm-hmm. and my lived mm-hmm. experience. So then I became identifying in different layers. And I started getting involved in politics. So I took on a new identity of an advocate and an activist. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get to it as the conversation goes, but the changing identity through one's course of lifetime.
Oh, wow. Incredible. Because we think we are one as we are born and then we die that way. Or at least for many people it's that way. But being able to be flexible and to recreate yourself is amazing, and seeing you, how you have grown and changed, mm-hmm. and following you, and I was amazed when at this DEI conference where I was able to hear your speech after this interesting speech from the person from HR.
Yes.
And how we see the reality from different perspectives. Do you remember that?
Yes, I clearly remember. I felt really bad. Yes, and I have a story behind that.
Okay, tell us.
Well, and to circle back too, I didn't give you my identity as a daughter.
As a daughter? Okay, so, I love that.
Yes, you just said child? That. I am an only child. Oh, thank goodness. I never find only children.
That's hard to find. And let's talk about pride in that area.
Yes, okay. Yes. So we have lots of skills and traits to celebrate. And then children who come from big families think of us as one-dimensional. Same thing. Every layer of identity. People have ideas and preconceptions about who we are. Yes, only children can be like attention seekers at moments, mm-hmm. that's a label I don't like. You know what? We're super creative and we know how to occupy our thoughts and our minds, which means that we also pursue things with somewhat of a level of aggression that I love and embrace. Mm-hmm. But as a daughter, todavía mi papá dice mija, and my mom calls me mijita.
Oh,
and there's a funny story on the west side of Denver when I was really young. I got lost in the grocery store and my mom said she was shopping and she said over the loudspeaker, they said, "We have a little girl up here and she's wearing a Fleetwood Mac t-shirt and jeans, and she said her name is Mijita." Oh. And my mom says that she can hear the other woman laughing. So yes, still as a daughter, even I'm 52, and I embrace being that person. And the stresses of the day, you think about who we have to be in a professional mm-hmm. environment. Mm-hmm. One of the best feelings I get is a phone call from my mom or my dad, and or my call to them at the end of the day. Nice. And the first thing you hear is, "Mijita, what are you doing? Aww. Hi, mija, how are you?" Aww. And it takes you to a different space mentally. Mm-hmm. And that does a lot of different things to our body. Mm-hmm. And so I embrace that. Yeah. And I love that.
One of the things that I learned when I say only child is like, "Oh, you are a brat." I'm like, "Am I? Maybe." So I learned to embrace being an only child and being, as you said, aggressive, but I will say more like I'm focused. Yeah, I'm really focused. I know what I want and I'm not going to be apologetic about whatever I want.
Yeah.
I am an only child. And many times I have to say like, "You know what? I am an only child."
Yeah.
So I behave like one and I honor the only child that I am. And if somebody in the room doesn't like it, not my problem.
At all. Exactly.
I tell you because that's not my problem. I honor the one that I am.
Trilingual.
There you go. See, trilingual. So beautiful that you mentioned that because it is hard.
Yes.
Even that, being women of color, and then you are an only child, that's even like another stamp on your forehead, like only child.
And it's also a judgment because a lot of Latinas, absolutely. Why did you only have one child?
Absolutely.
And why are you only one child? That's one child. Right. I'm so excited that we had this conversation. Exactly. We have a sisterhood between us. Yes.
And it is hard. People judge you. Like,
yes.
Poor your kid.
Absolutely.
How are you doing that to him? what is it? Like, okay. No, it's my decision. My decision. My body, my decisions, right?
Oh my gosh. Hello.
There you go. And even that is taken from us. And then we live with the guilt of why.
That's a thought process you have, again, through the different chapters of your life of what do you want to do for your children / child? And I do know that one of the choices we make when we have children, or not to have children, is the affordability of having a child and providing for the next generation. Making sure that they have access to doors that we could not open ourselves. And you hear this continually over the hundreds of years for Latinos and Hispanos and all of the colors of our people. I want my next generation to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not easy to do when this country is very expensive in economics, healthcare, education, and the like.
And even community.
Absolutely. Oh, yes, yeah, social things are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well said. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we decided to be a single mom.
Yes.
Was it a decision? It was your decision?
So, truth be told, I've said this to a lot of people. If I had this to do over, my preference would have been to have 6 or 8 children. I would have loved to have just been baking and cooking all day. And I've joked with a lot of people. I said, I didn't want any girls. I just wanted boys. Yes, and I mean, not that I'm picky or anything, but that's not how things landed, and I'm very happy with my choices. My son is a blessing. He's a really good person.
Is he here in Colorado?
He's here in Colorado, and he's a well-developed person, and I'm just so proud of him, and I will always wonder what it would have been like to have a bigger family. Mm-hmm. This is what worked out for me, and I embrace the solution that I said, okay, this is expensive. I want to make sure he has access to college, to higher education. And just to be it, you know, I knew as an only child some of the barriers that it would create for him to not have siblings. We kind of joke about it a little bit now.
Really? Yeah. With him?
Yes. Okay. So we talk about grandparents, me and him, and I said, you know, when I age, where am I going to go? And what am I going to take care of me? Right, because you don't have any siblings. And he said, don't worry, Mom, I'm going to put you in a nursing home very far away.
Oh, my God.
And he was joking. He was joking.
Way better.
That's what I said. But he's being silly. And so, no, there's a fun bond behind, but between us of friends because of the dialogue between two humans and still very much respectful between a mother and a son.
Nice. Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful, and I totally resonate as a mom with my son. We have, I've been married for 25 years, and my husband is a really good dad to my son. But still, the connection between my son and me is stronger. We get to have conversations that I never imagined when, like, for instance, when he was ready for his first time with a partner. And he was telling me, he dropped the bomb, I'm like, okay. What do you need from me? How can I be helpful? So things
and he came to you for that.
He came to me, and it was a beautiful conversation. Like, Mom, I need your support. I'm ready to do that. I just don't know how. And I'm like, what makes you think that I know?
I love it.
Like the internal conversation of being available, but and yet all afraid and of providing the best way.
Yeah.
According to his needs at the moment, and being open, and but also humble of being selected for the conversation, you know?
Amazing.
So let's go to your childhood. Tell us about you when you were a kid. What do you remember? Mm-hmm. What comes to your mind?
So Colorado looked really different back in, so I was born in 71. The word Latino was not used in community. The word Hispanic was used. Uh-huh. I do remember, so my family roots, come from northern New Mexico and Colorado. I've traced it back 5 generations.
Wow.
And yes, I feel like our bloodline is tied to the land of northern New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming. And ironically, now I serve Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, the Dakotas, Utah. And I don't serve New Mexico, but it's this territory, this region of this diversity of the land, of the people, of the culture, and so I feel connected to it in that sense. My parents are representative of their generation where they needed to assimilate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So no Spanish in the house. So that we didn't have an accent when we would go out, you know. Mm-hmm. And my grandparents spoke only Spanish.
Oh, nice.
And so
are you able to hear some Spanish here and there?
Very infrequently. So my grandparents, for example, were Hipólito Griego, Emelina Trujillo, Juan Domingo Romero. Wow. And it's this culture that was because of the necessity or the implied necessity to assimilate that was slowly buried. In some respects, that as I was coming up and seeing barriers to, I mentioned education, healthcare, business, and other things, I started feeling a sense of pride, but also anger to stand up and be identified in a very unique, particular way, and not assimilate. And so I think that that's a fascinating thing. And there are a lot of people in Denver that have a similar story of my age and my generation. And I had to look for that tribe intentionally. And so it's a fascinating moment to see the complexity of Latinos here in Denver and to see on social media, you know, Venezolanos de Denver or Grupos de Mexicanos or Puertorriqueñas de Colorado or something like this, where you see a mixture of what it is to be Latino and to see people who don't know anything about Latinidad and say, but aren't y'all Mexican? Aren't y'all Latinas? Aren't y'all Hispanic?
Right.
And then to have to explain that in a consistent manner, and to identify that we're not all the same in a space and in a room. So my time growing up in Colorado, public school, public education, a mixture of private education to understand what the privileged, if you go to a private school, how advanced that was in comparison to my public education. Working in a small, really small geographic area for the majority of my life, my network exploded because I am who I am, and I talk to people, and I engage in people, and have built relationships around conversation.
When did you realize that you were an only child? ¿Cuándo te cayó el 20?
I would say early.
Oh, really?
Very early. I had 5 girlfriends when I was early teens and into teen years, and they all came from families of 6 or 8.
Ah, that's why you wanted a 6 or 8, because of your friends.
And I was only child, and I was always at their house.
Ah, okay.
And I was always like looking around and saying, oh my gosh, look at all this food, look at all these people, look at all this conversation and all this noise.
Right. And what was the feeling?
I loved it back then. I loved it back then in that time. It's so funny because I think post-COVID, I embrace being home and alone and enjoying the silence and myself. And I am so confident and comfortable in my own company.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I'm asking this question because I realized when I was like 35 that I was an only child.
Really?
I grew up with a lot of cousins.
I see.
So we were like one. Like they were my brothers. Till even today, we get this bonding and this beautiful relationship. But when I was 35, I moved to a different city and I was going through a really hard time. And I didn't have anybody that I was able to talk to about. Like, I needed the sister, not even the brother. I needed the sister there to hold my hand and hear me cry and all of that. And then I realized, oh my God, I'm an only child. And I was like 35.
That's a cool concept and the contrast between the two of us.
Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful.
I hope somebody did hold your hand at 35, though.
No, but I was able to survive. I went through, I'm a human. I am resilient. We Latinas are resilient.
I always say mountains and valleys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's talk about mountains and valleys.
Okay.
Can you tell us one, if you can share, of course, one time of your life that you were going through the mountain and it was really heavy, and what did you do? What was the way out for you?
Okay, there are lots of valleys. There are a handful of mountains. So I'll give you a professional valley. I think about this frequently. So I had a female boss and we encountered conflict. Oh. And by the way, I will say, I think conflict can be very good.
Yeah.
This was not good.
It may help you. Oh my God. It was a destructive one. Okay.
Well, so thinking about women in the workforce, my son was playing sports, and so I was very fortunate to have a Monday through Friday kind of job, 8 to 5, 9 to 5, and a professional environment.
Were you with the government?
I was. Okay. I was with a local government here in Colorado. Okay. I won't say which one. And I said, I need to leave early on these days to go pick up my son from school. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that it wasn't new to me to see the managers coming and going and having different schedules, especially the men. Mm-hmm. You know, they had to leave early, they had to come in late, they had to do something, and nobody thought twice about it,
exactly.
Right?
It's perfect.
Commonplace. Yes. Very familiar. Mm-hmm. I said, I need to leave early these days. And my boss said, well, you can't do that. And I said, who says? Let's have a conversation.
Okay.
And it didn't go well, and so I said, I will take my vacation time and leave early. Okay. And then I got in trouble for taking too much vacation time. Okay. And so I said, you know, this is not going to work. And I've been here a long time, and I'm a very good employee, and why are we having an issue with this? And so suffice it to say, she said, your son can't play more than 2 sports at a time. And I said, bingo, you can't tell me what I can do outside of this job. That is A, none of your business, and B, and I felt very empowered all of a sudden because I knew that was inappropriate. And I said, now there's a problem. And so I will tell you that we, the place where I worked, they had this mediation process, and this mediator came in, and the mediator asked my boss at the time, how do you see Lily? And she did a description that included standing up and some behaviors that were, like, at that time, like a rap artist.
Okay.
And I stood there, and my mouth fell open, and the mediator's mouth fell open, and I was like, holy moly, this is some racial bias.
Uh-huh.
So how did I deal with it?
Is she white?
Yes.
Okay. Because I'm asking also because sometimes I met a lot of Latinas who have really have been bleached. And they are behave like whiter than white.
And we wonder if that's a survival technique, or if it's a assimilation technique, mm-hmm. or if it's preference, personal preference. There are lots of reasons behind it. And I think that we do learn, back in 80s and 90s, it wasn't called code switching. Now mm-hmm. they use the terminology code switching often. And I learn these things, right? And then I'm learning them as an older adult, not as a young person entering the workforce. So I solved that by leaving, but it wasn't before a lot of stress. It is not what it is now to say, I'm just going to quit. No, I had a mortgage, I had responsibilities, I had to put food on the table.
Of course.
And I go back to my parents that I would, here was a grown adult and I was crying on the phone and saying, this is happening. And my father's the one who taught me. He said, Mija, you can die tomorrow and they're going to replace you and not think twice about it.
Exactly.
And it changed. It took me from not crying anymore to saying, okay, now I have to be solution oriented in how I'm going to address this. And, I left and I found a better job, and I will tell you that the next boss I had loved me and had three daughters of his own who were playing sports. I said, I need to leave early to sports, and he's like, cool, do you want to like sign on early tomorrow, or do you want to work late Friday, do you want to work Saturday? And I was like, total mind shift. And so I will tell you those lessons, that one person, that one unnecessary nastiness taught me how to manage others and to be the person I wanted in that moment, and to also emulate the behaviors of a boss that I like. And I still try to do that. I have moments so that I'm still growing every day, but it taught me a lot.
Wow.
And I'm also 15 years away from that moment, so I'm okay with it now. In the moment, I was not okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And painful, because it was something that it was important to you. It's not like I'm tired and I want to go home.
Absolutely.
It's like my son needs me.
Yeah.
And you remind me of a boss that I told him here in Colorado, if I get a phone call from the school, or if my son needs me, I'll go. He's my priority.
Priority number one.
And he was like, yeah, absolutely, right. Yeah. When the moment came,
yeah.
I'm like, we were in a big meeting. I'm like, so long, my son needs me. And he was so mad at me. I almost lose the job. And I was like, I told you.
You set the expectation.
Exactly. I told you that was going to happen. And it happened because I'm a mom. Like, I know that he can be sick, whatever it is, and I'm here for him.
Yeah.
So he learned, and we learned, and we were able to, he's a really nice guy, so we were able to go through
good.
It. So
it's not always easy.
It's not always easy.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you were able to stand for you at the moment.
I had support, thankfully, and it wasn't easy.
Which makes me think that it's important to have support.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for Latinas in particular, for women, we face a lot of barriers in the workplace. And so my next step was equal pay, and that became a pivotal moment for me to really reconcile the work and the amount of time I was dedicating to work, and then recognizing as I moved from my 20s to my 30s, I started thinking about how long do I work until retirement?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I watched my parents retire at 50, 55.
Okay.
Currently, they're talking about raising the retirement age to 70.
What?
Yes. Some of the presidential candidates are talking about raising the retirement age to 70. We have a life, Latinas have a life expectancy. I looked for some data before I came here, about 80, 84. And we will commonly outlive our male counterparts. And so then I also think about not just retirement. So in my 30s, I started thinking about retirement. Now, serving Health and Human Services, I'm starting to think about healthcare as a senior citizen. What does this look like if you need a caregiver? What does this look like? Who is your caregiver? We talked about our sons. The state of Colorado has a law that they will reimburse your family to take care of you, because they are recognizing that that is an actual job. Whether that's your family, it's a job. Yes. And so these are some of the things I started to explore. And with unequal pay, we have to not only work harder and longer, but this impacts our ability to retire at a decent age where we can enjoy retirement and be healthy. And looking at you and the amount of dedication you have to your body and your overall well-being, that's what I think about. And I think about that, what does that look like at the end of my life? And it's an interesting place to get, and to where we can look up from the moment of taking care of ourselves, taking care of our kids, taking care of our parents, and then start to look up to think about retirement and our future and our final chapters.
And what the meaning of taking care of ourselves again.
Absolutely.
Going back to the beginning. Okay, so now going back to, let's go back to what you do now. Going back to the beginning.
Okay. My identity that I love.
That identity. I love it. I've been able to watch you and to hear you. And I have to say that I love that. I don't love all your identities. And I love that one as well. Because it is authentic. It's more than, from my perspective, from here, from the outside, it's more than a job.
Yes.
It's who you are. And you make it a job as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So currently, getting to say this on your podcast, I'm serving the Biden-Harris administration as the director for Region 8, United States Department of Health and Human Services.
My heart is going to explode.
Representing the first Latino secretary in the history of this country, Secretary Javier Becerra. And it's just a cool moment to be doing this work. And I love what I'm doing. I embrace it. It's funky. When I first came here, somebody said, well, you're not a healthcare professional. You're not a doctor. You're not an MD.
And you're not even white.
And I looked to Secretary Becerra. He's also not a medical doctor. He's also not a healthcare professional. He's an attorney and he's a former congressperson. And in the environment with the fall of Roe v. Wade through the Dobbs decision at the Supreme Court, you talked about body choice and freedom a moment ago. I see this as a moment for women to stand up as patriots in this country, to say we have a secretary who is an attorney and understands a very litigious environment where we find ourselves right now as we decide who is going to control a woman's body. And so that's just one of the topics that we touch. And I feel like I'm the right person at the right time for this as well, representing the secretary here. And working the story I just shared with you, and raising my son and having received Medicaid when my son was born. And so speaking now about the importance of having access to healthcare insurance, speaking about maternal health, you and I just talked about this. This country, many times you will hear in media and politicians talk about this. They'll say, this is the best country on earth. Well, this country has maternal statistics that we are not even ranking with the top countries in this world. And so addressing it and calling it out and serving an administration that has language that says there are systematic racist behaviors and systematic racist systems that are preventing us from equality and moreover equity as we address healthcare, mental health, maternal health, and health equity. That moment right there tells me I'm in the right spot at the right time serving the Biden-Harris administration, and I could not be more proud to be doing that.
Of course. And we as Latinas, this community couldn't be more proud of having you there representing us. Because seriously, it's hard, it's easy to see, and I've seen a lot of Latinas who are bleached, and it is sad when we hear them talking and we say, like, I don't feel represented there. I am, as Latina, I don't feel, your words are not my words. What you are saying is not for the goodwill of my community. So when you talk, I totally feel represented. I'm like, Yes, we. And I
feel it's huge.
It is beautiful, and it is huge because it is like we got this. It's like if, like getting the power back of we got this. We are not by ourselves. Our voices are here, and you can talk about this pain. The other day, I was reading an article about the medical attention to Latinas and how sad it is, especially if you don't speak the language.
It's terrible. That you were reading that.
It is terrible because the attention that you get immediately, the rejection immediately, all the comments immediately, all the looks.
Yep.
Everything that makes you feel like, why are you here?
The fact that you just said all of that. So thank you for reading the article. Thanks for bringing that up. Mm-hmm. The words that you just said, I'm very grateful. Thank you. I try very hard to focus on... Let me take a pause on that for a minute and just say that this is an interesting moment in history to be really deep diving into who we are as a country and who we are as a people. I was thinking about coming to speak with you, and I thought about Latinas. We're Afro-Latinas. Mm-hmm. We're Asian American Latinas. Mm-hmm. We're queer and gay and bisexual and lesbian Latinas. We're heavyset and thin Latinas, and we have this body image that's created in this country. And we're intelligent, we're hardworking, and we're optimistic, and we're dreaming. And we are dreamers, mm-hmm. and we're so many different things. And yet, there's a campaign that the CDC, one of the agencies that we have at HHS, calls it the Hear Her campaign.
Okay.
So Black and Indigenous women have higher statistics of maternal mortality than any other population. But the point that you just made is relative to that statistic for Latinas and for women overall, are they heard when they express pain? Mm-hmm. Are they heard when they express...
And we're supposed to be more resistant to pain.
Absolutely. We have to suck it up and get to work. We have to go take care of parents. We have to take care of kids. We have to show up for our jobs. We have to show up for our sisters. And
exactly.
All of this pressure to also not say, I'm... feeling not okay mentally. I'm feeling not okay physically. Mm-hmm. And to be heard in that moment and to take away the stigma and say, you know what? I can't show up in all these spaces and I need treatment and I need healthcare insurance that's going to cover me to get this done. Mm-hmm. And I need a doctor and a support system that will cover this and make me okay. And a job and an employer who says, I'm going to make sure you're okay and your job's protected while you get okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's very complicated.
True. It is complex. I know that we can't fix it from just one way, but we have to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's important. We have to start somewhere and start empowering and being able to give back the voice to our Latinas so they can speak up and say, like, I need this. And usually from the pain, what is your level of pain from 0 to 10? Our 5 is not the same as a white 5. So our 5 means, oh, no, you're okay.
And maybe our culture told us that 5 isn't 5. And maybe you're...
Say 1.
Yet you're not okay. Yes. So there's, again, the layering of that. You're totally right. Mm-hmm. You're totally right.
And we need to keep training our Latinas to speak up, to be able to embrace her voice and move others to say what they need to say. Although... I know that we are afraid of losing our jobs and all of that, because also our jobs are really thin jobs, you know?
The security net is always fragile. Mm-hmm. You brought up 2 points that I would love to share with you professionally. So I hosted Melanie Fuentes Rainer, is another Latina.
Okay.
I forget her introduction. She says, I'm a proud 8th generation Arizonan with a Latina mom, and I forget who her father was culturally. So anyway, the fact that there's another Latina serving in the administration.
Nice.
Oh, 3 points. Excuse me. This administration has hired more Latinos than ever in history.
I love that.
Across the board, nationally. So there's that component to talk about level setting and equity in government, in an administration, in positions of power and leadership. But then also we have been focused on healthcare workforce.
Nice.
So when we go anywhere across this region, one of the things we hear from anybody, and I mentioned kind of Native Hawaiians in Utah, Latinos who don't want to be seen in other states because maybe they have a mixed status family.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Colorado as well, I want a doctor who looks like me. I want a mental health provider who looks like me, who speaks my language. Mm-hmm. I want equity in the healthcare workforce. Mm-hmm. And then subsequently we hear that access for higher education is not as easy to get into. So we show up and we visit with higher ed professionals.
Nice.
And we talk about what are you doing to ensure that your recruitment and your retention into the healthcare industries is representative of your population here in Colorado, Utah, or any of the other states that we talked about. And that's not limited to the Latino community. It's we're looking at indigenous populations and cultural competency in healing and really deep diving in those conversations. And then lastly, you mentioned language.
Mm-hmm.
The Biden administration just redid some rules related to the Affordable Care Act for language access.
I know.
Have been going around talking about, I didn't know all this.
Oh, wow.
This is the law for language access under the ACA. And the reason I mentioned Melanie Fontes-Rainer is that she is traveling the country and I had her here in Region 8 to talk about the work that she's doing, and their work often ends up in court. And she's an attorney, and she's been with Secretary Becerra for a long time, and so she is leading the charge, not just in abortion access and abortion healthcare and women's health, maternal health, but language access too. So the stories are super important that we hear from people about what they experience when they share with a doctor, what they're feeling, what they what they want to express, and whether or not they have the ability to do that, because your children should not be showing up as your interpreter when the secretary tells that story. He did that as a child of immigrants.
Oh, wow.
To show up and interpret for his parents.
Oh, wow.
And those are private conversations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a child shouldn't be expected to do that technical communication.
Exactly.
They should be in school.
Exactly.
Yes.
I know, and it is sad. The other day I was watching a series about that, and it is sad because but also there is no other option at the moment, right? That's what all that the parents have and
Absolutely.
The kids have to survive and
Absolutely.
To continue doing something with their lives. So it's just, it's so hard. Okay, so a good book, your favorite book.
Oh, I'm sorry. You made me laugh because I have been called a collector of books, not a reader of books. So
okay.
let me expand upon that a little bit.
Okay.
I love to read, so I have a bachelor's degree in political science and a master's degree in history.
Okay.
When I finished the master's degree, I took the courses, I already had my son, so I went very slow through the master's degree. The week after I finished my master's, I opened a book and I read like 2 pages and fell asleep.
I'm done.
And a year goes by, I pick up another book,
okay.
And I'm like, 2 pages, out,
yes.
Fell asleep.
Of course.
So I read something one time on social media. It said, if you see the book and you love it, buy it. You'll read it someday.
Uh-huh.
I have so many books. I have so many books and I have not read any. So okay, this is silly. The Bear just won a bunch of awards. Have you heard of The Bear?
No.
I think it's on Hulu. And
actually, I've heard of it.
Okay, so it's about chefs and a restaurant and all this. So they keep calling out Coach K's book on leadership. So
okay.
I went and found the book on Coach K on leadership. So I just bought it, and he's a basketball coach.
Okay.
Funny thing, coming to talk to you, it's a man's perspective. It's a white man's perspective on leadership. I have already found that I love the book.
Okay, good.
But I'm thinking as I process it, how would I address some of these situations for leadership? So I'm also reading another book called Grace.
Okay.
And I can forget the author's name. I'm really terrible with names.
Me too.
He worked for the Obama administration.
Okay.
He was a speechwriter for President Obama. It is about the days after, in between a shooting in the southern part of the country and the Sandy Hook shooting.
Okay.
And what the team experienced writing, I'll get very emotional, because we do work on gun violence prevention from the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. And it talks about what President Obama wanted to say at these speeches to talk about people who were killed through mass gun violence. Mm-hmm. and has how he felt as a father and the president of this mm-hmm. country mm-hmm. in this mm-hmm. moment where we saw consistently announcements he had to make to say that mass gun violence took place. Mm-hmm. I love this book. I hate that we haven't solved this situation.
Uh-huh. No.
We hear about it too frequently and we're mm-hmm. immune because we have to keep going as human beings, and so we hear about gun violence all the time. Mm-hmm. The Latino students that were shot in Uvalde, Texas, mm-hmm. That report just came out 2 weeks ago. It's a 600-page report. I'm reading that. That's not a book.
Oh my God.
I'm reading it. I'm the first 100 pages already on the failure to enter the classroom and protect those precious lives. That was a racist attack of gun mm-hmm. violence, right? And I'm also reading Liz Cheney's new book, Protecting Democracy. And I just listened to her on a podcast, and they said, who would have ever thought we would have this moment where we're talking to you, and it was the difference between Republicans and Democrats on protecting democracy. And so I will share with you that the books I just identified, I'm not completing any because I'm so focused on work. So my interest is really diverse, and you know, I hope that I'll have that time in retirement that we just talked about to continue educating my mind. Uh-huh. But I also love to read about other cultures.
Oh, nice.
And I love to learn about other stories that really identify a people, since I don't have that lived experience, and how we can be collaborating with each other mm-hmm. to talk about the importance of identity mm-hmm. and the importance of celebrating okay. our culture, our gender preferences, mm-hmm. And be successful in this country with still being individuals mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. yet collective.
Mm-hmm. I think the next book that I would love to read is yours.
Well, I would love to write a book.
Of leadership and all your experience as Latina.
I'd love to write a book.
Okay. I would love to read it.
In my spare time, one of these days.
Yeah. I'll wait.
Okay.
I'm
okay.
Patient. Discipline and patience are two of my superpowers. So I'll wait.
Okay, good.
Con gusto. So, last question. What would you say to the girl who was playing with your girlfriends when you were 5 or 6 as an only child, and they were full of friends and sisters and brothers? From now, from the person who you are now, what would you say to the 5-year-old you?
I laugh. I have funny things and I have serious things to tell that person, that little okay. girl. Do sit-ups every day.
Stop.
I would have done sit-ups sooner. Every day. I would have started with sit-ups and push-ups.
Okay.
Still, I would have had my son. No regrets, ever. And it's so funny to think of the journey, the paseo, to get to being his mom. Mm-hmm. That I don't want to change. But that even has complications in that journey, mm-hmm. that path, mm-hmm. conflict. I would tell her, don't start working as early as you did.
Got it.
I started working at 14.
Wow.
Be more protective and create barriers.
Okay. Like said, boundaries earlier?
Yes. Okay. I said barriers. Look at that little Freudian slip.
Okay.
Boundaries was the word I wanted, and I said barriers. Interesting. Fight more in the Latino community, the Latina space. Find your identity, find your culture. Mm-hmm. Always show up for mom and dad, because you will later anyways.
I love that.
And get your education as quickly as possible. I love my journey. I love mm-hmm. who I am. I have no shame in it. I've made a lot of interesting personal choices, and I have no shame in anything that's occurred in my life. but I'm really proud of where I've landed, and it probably didn't have to be so challenging at some points in time.
Got it.
But it's also crafted who I am, mm-hmm. And how
strength.
I and my life vision and how I see the world. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Finally, I promise, this is the last one. What did you say to all the Latinas that are listening to you now? And that they feel maybe that they don't belong, that they are not enough, and all this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Love yourself, love who you are physically, mentally, educate your mind, seek education
mm-hmm.
in a really hard, passionate, aggressive way. There are
like
ways.
Like an only child.
Absolutely. Ooh, yes, well said. Value yourself.
Mm.
I also think that young Latinas need to value and protect themselves physically,
mm-hmm.
Because life is long.
Yeah. At least longer than we think when we are that age.
Yes. Yes. Have hope. Échale ganas.
Échale ganas.
Siempre. Find women who will support you.
I love that.
Eliminate women who don't value you more than you value yourself.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lily.
Gracias a ti.
Beautiful interview. Thank you for all the laughs and the stories and the connection. And I never thought that you would be an only child and more than one and a kid. I was like, oh, wow, that's amazing. So thank you for your time. Thank you for all that you do for us.
Ditto. Thank you for bringing these stories. Listening to Desde Cima. Desde la Cima?
Yes.
Perdón. Las cuentas, las personas, las noticias, todo lo que estás trayendo a la comunidad.
Absolutely.
Yo digo Latinas, gracias a ti.
Latinas Leaders is coming. I don't know if you are aware of that. That's a celebration of the Week of Women for Latinas. We gather like 600 women in a room to celebrate our Latinas.
I did not know.
Okay, I'll send you an invitation for
this year.
We
will gladly show up.
March 1st. March 1st, Botanic Gardens, from 6 to 9 p.m.
Okay.
So we'll have a panel, and it is a beautiful celebration of Latinas getting together.
Awesome.
Talking about important topics.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So much.
May I?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
I'm so grateful for this. Thank you.